Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Harold Holzer. He is a presidential historian, among other things, teaches at City University of New York. He's won all kinds of awards, but he's out with a brand new book, The Presidents Versus the Press, The Endless Battle Between the White House and the Media, From Founding Fathers to Fake News. Great subtitle. I hardly have to explain what the rest of the book is about with that subtitle so succinctly capturing it. But, Harold, I love this term fake news. It's become such a word among our lexicon now that I don't think I had heard before. Is that a Trump original for this era?
Not precisely. I've found a few examples dating all the way back to George Washington where there were complaints about false news, so that's pretty close, and fake journalists. I don't know if he's read the history, but the common thread is that beginning with George Washington, presidents have been really violently outraged by the coverage they get, especially if they perceive it to be partisan.
I know that it went back to George Washington. We read in your book the statements that he wanted included in his farewell address, but do the presidents throughout the years have an argument about the press being unfair to them? Is it a legitimate argument?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think there are times when the press is really divided along party lines. In fact, in the Washington era, all the way through about the turn of the 20th century, the press was rigidly one party or the other. They were not only supportive of that party, but they were cogs in the political machine. Their editors got federal jobs if the president was elected. They got government printing contracts in return for their loyalty. Then they, in turn, advertised the fortunes and the campaigns of these presidents. So, in those moments, attacks from the other party seemed, anger-inducing, unfair. So there was some legitimate reason for the pushback. Because I'll give you an example. A British observer coming to the United States went to a political event in the West, the Midwest today. And the next morning he went to a newsstand, as it were, and picked up a Democratic and a Republican newspaper to read the coverage of the political event. And he said that each was unrecognizable. To the Republican paper, the event had been magnificent with thousands of supporters. To the Democratic paper, it had been a bust, attended only by a few drunks. And that's the way the coverage was. Now, one can argue that cable coverage has gone back to that standard, but without the kind of honest admission that the coverage is driven by philosophical or party standards.
As we watch, and I'm thinking mostly of TV journalism now, a lot of it seems to be entertainment. It's not meant to be remembered. It's just there to entertain you for an evening, and then you forget it, and you start all over again the next night. Yeah. Between the different networks. Was news ever meant as entertainment before our modern era, as it was known at the time?
Well, newspapers certainly were. And just consider the deprivation in terms of information from the colonial period until printing really got its act together in the United States. Steam presses were introduced. It was an era of weekly newspapers that were devoured by literate families. At the dawn of the Republic, it was said that every copy of every newspaper was read by 40 or 50 individuals before it kind of dissolved in their hands. And newspapers contained not only political news, which was written in a really lively way, provocative way, to be sure, much like the TV commentaries today, but they also had serializations of European novels. They had, local news. They had advertisements of entertainments. They had reviews in New York when the New York Herald came into being. They had stock news and racing news, the predecessor of sports sections. So, yeah, I would say the media has always striven to be entertaining, and politics was just part of the entertainment.
Whether we hear it called false news or fake news or complaints about it, about the coverage over the years, how come, and maybe I'm wrong, but it just seems to me that it's always the presidency that complains in one way or another, either quietly or brashly, like President Trump does. you don't see other segments. You don't see the sports industries complaining about fake news in the news media. You don't see any other industry doing it. Why?
I think the presidency, that's a really great point. I wish I'd made it in the book, frankly. I think, you know, the presidency has such a direct connection with so many segments of society that it feels it should be celebrated most of the time. And you're right, the pushback doesn't come from other industry in the same ways. They simply hire more consultants and more PR executives to create alternative stories or to push back in what the industry calls crisis management. The presidency arguably is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week crisis. And they have direct and constant interaction with the press, maybe not as promiscuously as Donald Trump does with, you know, daily briefings and tweet storms every morning. But there's always been a sense that they're out there and they can strike back because they have the last word, especially in the modern era from, I would guess, the Obama and Trump administrations. There are alternative ways to get to the people, although others have tried that. I mean, FDR brilliantly used radio as his conduit to the people because he was convinced that the nation's publishers were all arrayed against him. And indeed, he never got a majority endorsement for his presidential campaigns. All four times, the publishers were majority against him, no matter who the opponent. So he devised this system of fireside chats in which he came into American homes in the same way that their family's favorite radio programs came into the home. And he was conversational, and he was calm, and he had mastered the medium. And even though there were only 29 fireside chats, it was enormously effective. And he got beyond the press in that way, in much the same way that Kennedy used televised news conferences to appeal directly to the people around the journalists, around the White House correspondents.
It seems like wartime is when it brings out this huge tension between the White House and the press, and that's happened throughout history. What is it about during wars that makes it that the president's attention can be diverted from his role as commander-in-chief to dealing with the home front and what they read or see?
Yeah, I think wartime absolutely transforms presidents into censors-in-chief as well. Although John Adams cracked down on journalists without the benefit of a war, just the threat of a war, he signed the Sedition Act, which made it a federal crime to mock the president, and pursued a number of court cases as a result of which editors were fined and imprisoned. Lincoln was very clear that he believed the Civil War was such a threat to the future of the Constitution that he was authorized to abrogate certain rights under the Constitution in order to protect the whole shebang. So his administration was astonishingly responsible for the arrest of more than 200 newspaper men during the Civil War. And these were not Confederates. These were border state Democrats and even Northern Democrats who opposed the draft or opposed enlistment. The editors were hauled off and imprisoned in military prisons without the benefit of trial, which was astonishing. And on through history, as you say, Wilson created practically a state news agency and propaganda unit during World War I, and also forbade coverage that could give aid and comfort to the enemy. Roosevelt did much the same thing in World War II. And as I found out when I did my research, I was pretty surprised at the extent to which editors are complaining that they were maltreated and denied access and, in fact, spied on by the Obama administration, with merely the threat of terrorism looming as a so-called war.
I'm chatting with Harold Holzer about his brand new book, The Presidents Versus the Press, The Endless Battle Between the White House and the Media from the Founding Fathers to Fake News. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Harold, one of the things that I really thought about as I read this, because President Nixon, it was so immediate in the history when I was growing up, and his obvious distrust of the press. Is there ever a point with the presidency where throughout history where the president has had a good relationship with the press? Because we always hear about the bad ones.
Yeah, well, I would say that the really good communicators have press people that they are fond of and that they deal with in a friendly way. Lincoln had press allies all over the place, and he ignored Democratic newspapers and simply gave his stories and access to Republicans. But Theodore Roosevelt was the first to give open access. He welcomed reporters into the Oval Office, or at least a little anteroom adjacent to the Oval Office, every afternoon when he got his daily shave from a barber. So the White House correspondents would be let in, and as he was being lathered and shaved, and the journalists loved it. They called it the barber's hour. Even though it was off the record, they got a lot of great background stuff. They got trial balloons and leaks, and sometimes TR would put things on the record if he liked the way they sounded. It became such a game that the journalists enjoyed saying provocative things just as the barber held a straight-edge razor over Roosevelt's neck, because TR had a habit of jumping up and down and waving his arms if he got really animated about a question. So it was fun. And FDR, for all of his censorship in World War II and all of his antipathy toward publishers, who were mostly Republican, held 998 news conferences, two a week, almost all through his presidency, except when he was traveling abroad. And even then, sometimes on battleships at Warm Springs at Hyde Park. And although those two were off the record, the press loved him. The working press loved him. There was an unofficial ban on taking pictures of FDR in his wheelchair, a sort of a gentleman's agreement, later enforced by the administration. But at the beginning, if a photographer had been ordered by his publisher to get a picture of Roosevelt in his wheelchair, invariably a friendly photographer would jostle him just at the moment he was exposing his picture. That was how intimately friendly they were. And in fact, the result was a conspiracy of silence about Roosevelt's paralysis.
Well, I thought it was interesting you pointed out in the book about KFI, the Los Angeles station, dropping the fireside chats and the White House's reaction to that. There was a financial aspect for KFI keeping those on the air, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, because they were usually Sunday nights at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, which was kind of as we still call it, prime time. And the loss of commercials was injurious. But also, some of the stations were owned by publishers. There was, open conglomeration between print journalism and broadcast, which still exists. And the publishers were not happy about giving Roosevelt a platform, especially during or around campaign season. And there were United States senators who complained that Roosevelt was using fireside chats for political purposes. Invariably, the audiences had their way. There was such demand for Roosevelt. I mean, taking him off the air in Los Angeles would be like canceling Jack Benny or Bob Hope on the radio. He was part of the fabric of the radio culture, and his popularity won out ultimately.
And I also thought it was interesting, just in recent history, where you point out about the Obama administration's relationship with the press. I know that the conventional wisdom was that the Obama administration would be the most transparent administration in history, and yet that administration's working relationship with the press was as secretive as President Trump's, but yet it kind of played itself out in a different way as far as how the White House dealt with the press, right?
Yeah, and the fact that Obama is famous for no drama probably kept the lid on this seething and growing hostility between the journalists and the president. He did, tap the phones of several reporters and their families in an effort that, presidents from Nixon to Reagan to Obama to Trump have always tried to plug the leaks in their administration, manically. Some have asked for lie detector tests, some have, leaked sources of leaks as leaks. But Obama was, for reasons he said of national security, cracked down on investigations and also was extremely resistant to freedom of information requests. His argument was there were so many thousands of them that his operation could not handle all of them. And yes, he did leave office saying he had been the most transparent of presidents. But as I found out from reading the records and the reports and of reporter after reporter, as well as independent observers and adjudicators of press transparency, that Obama's administration was considered one of the most closed ever. They referred to newspaper inquirers as the blob. That was their phrase to describe the White House press corps. And as often as not, when there was an inquiry to the press secretary, and, you know, in the old days, if you had a question, you went to the press secretary and either got an answer or a no comment, or in the case of Trump's White House, you got an argument. But in the case of Obama's administration, they often said, well, just tune into the White House website. That's our official answer. And that really irritated the reporters who thought tradition made it mandatory that they get direct and personal answers.
Well, we always think we're living through such unique times, and then come to find out this has been going on since the dawn of the Republic, these fights. The book is just fascinating. It's The Presidents Versus the Press, The Endless Battle Between the White House and the Media, From the Founding Fathers to Fake News by Harold Holzer. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Harold, just a fantastic, fantastic history here for us to read and enjoy, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I hope everybody in your area is safe. And stay safe and recovers.
Thank you, as do we. Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.